You know, Mix has warned that South Africa could become a failed state politically and economically if the country's decline is not arrested immediately via the right economic plans, and that this could happen as soon as 2030. The group's chief executive, Claude Besek, joins us on the line now with more of the detail. Claude, thanks so much for your time this evening. So just to reiterate, if our economic model doesn't shift and shift fast along with supportive policy, we could potentially be looking at a failed state come 2030. Has COVID-19 pushed us down this path, or were we heading this way nevertheless?
Hi, good to be back. Well, we were heading this way nevertheless, and the data upon which we rely to make this forecast, not a prediction, but a forecast, is reliable, and it is going down some 15 years, and it actually does not take into account COVID-19 and its effect. So to answer the question, you know, what is the effect of COVID-19? Well, likely to accelerate, you know, the pace of transition from what is effectively a fragile state to a failed state, if not arrested.
What data have you been plugging into your models?
Okay, so that's a very good question. So instead of looking at the typical short-term macroeconomic growth performance that most, you know, government officials and economists look at, and which have been wrong about South Africa for the past, 20 years now, we decided to look at other foundations of state performance, looking at a balance of indicators of state performance, which really give us a comprehensive view of how well or how poorly and where South Africa is performing compared to other states. So our data is not just South Africa, it's 180 countries, and we measure four key public goods areas of performance: national security and crime, political system or political governance, economic performance and inclusivity of the economy, and social performance, social welfare, well-being. Mm-hmm. And on that basis, what we see is that on the first indicator, security, and on the last one, welfare, South Africa has been doing very badly for many, many years, but it has not improved significantly, and it behaves a bit like, a third world country. On political governance and economic performance, it has done significantly better, but those have been declining for the past 10 years. And so what you see is effectively that instead of having had the worst performing aspects of South Africa's public goods being pulled towards a better performing state, it's the opposite has happened. Is our worst performing elements seem like they are pulling our best performance toward fragile/failed state. And that is our problem.
And what those results and that performance does, Claude, is point to the extent to which job intensive growth policies are very much a necessity right now. We've been beating this drum, however, for the longest while, and yet still we are. Have you managed to get a squiz at the new NEDLAC document that seems to have been doing the rounds? Various iterations of it have been, in fact, surfacing. Are you convinced that we're looking at anything meaningful to have emerged this time around as far as South Africa's economic recovery plan is concerned?
I am pessimistic because I don't think that there's a sufficient recognition of the fundamental necessity to put jobs at the center of this economic growth strategy. I still feel, and I think we are supported by that, in simple illustrative issues like deciding to put more money towards an airline like SAA, which to me is symptomatic of an inability, unwillingness to really realize that there is very little fiscal space left for this kind of state-centric, capital-intensive, non-poverty-reducing initiatives. While labor unions and government continue to resist the notion of, affordable costs that are aligned with the country's necessity. You know, Nisha, the problem is this, right? This is a country that has been adding 10 million people to its population every year for the past 30, 40 years. Yet the size of the working population mm-hmm. and the size of the tax-paying population has more or less remained the same. And how do you sustain an economy with tremendous amount of inequality, tremendous amount of poverty, tremendous amount of social capital degradations without creating jobs. It is just impossible. The math just do not work, really relying simply on the existing sectors, which are already, as we all know, tremendously stressed, and relying on the mining sector, which has been declining as its share of the economy, and obviously relying, well, on what is left, which is really consumer and government expenditure.
Okay, so Claude, that all being said then, part of what you are advocating here is a dual-track strategy of developing and maintaining those high levels of social support, but also paying for it by adopting what you're calling an aggressive special economic zone policy. What are you making of something like the automotive hub that's being created in Tshwane? I mean, that then potentially a step in the right direction, right?
Look, you know, the paper, the analysis that we wrote is a little bit provocative on purpose, because the idea is really to shake, mild consensus we have, that with some minute adjustments and improved governance of the parastatals, the country will renew its path to growth. We are saying that's not going to happen. You know, that is not a model that is going to be delivering the 5-6% growth that the country needs. And yes, obviously we can point to individual sectoral successes like the automotive sectors, but these are very expensive. They do not create massive amount of jobs. They require a massive amount of government investment in these infrastructure. They rely on massive amount of state grants and subsidies for a sector which may not hold on its own without that kind of subsidies. And we know very well that it has been the subject of repeated negotiation between the automotive sector and government for a number of years. So, if we were to do a full cost-benefit analysis calculus, I am not convinced that initiatives like that, focused on capital-intensive high technologies, would come out necessarily very positive. And, you know, they don't really create a sustainable upstream and downstream industry where South Africa is assembling and constructing massive amount of parts in the automotive sector, for instance. Most of these components are imported, and if they are not directly imported, the components of those components are imported. So the net trade benefits, the net employment gains, the net fiscal gains, in my mind, are very, very small. We need something completely different from that. We really need to look at countries like Malaysia. We really need to look at countries like Singapore, 20, 30 years ago. We need to look at South Korea 20, 30 years ago, even Mauritius, our neighbor, to really try to understand that there is no jumping, if you want, the developmental ladder. Mm-hmm. We cannot develop a country where 50, 40 million of the population doesn't have a job and whose prospects of having jobs are receding ever in the future.
Yeah.
You cannot create social capital that way. And social capital is the foundation of growth and sustainable development.
On that note, let's leave it there. Thanks so much, Claude, for your time this evening. That, of course, the CEO of Unomix, Claude Bessic.